Turundusraadio .
Hello, dear listeners, and welcome to our Marketing Radio talk show number 83. My name is Anu Malnarits. I'm going to be your host today from Marketing Institute. And my co-host is Raul Kaleb, who is a PR specialist.
Hello.
And our guest today in the studio is Jennifer Fries, who is Associate Director of Sponsorship from Toronto International Film Festival from Canada.
Hello, nice to be here.
Turunduse tulejoonel.
And the main topic today we're going to talk about is about sponsorship. To introduce it, I would like to say that as the Black Knights Film Festival ended, it's a very good time to talk about sponsorship in the cultural field. Marketeers have learned that there is a big difference between charity and sponsorship, as a charity is giving something away and a good sponsorship project is providing you a channel to your target group. That might be difficult to access otherwise. But despite that, we see that when the economy turns down, companies tend to decrease the sponsorship investment. So can you explain why is it like that?
Well, I think that's a huge mistake, typically. I mean, really, when you're looking at a sponsorship investment, you should be looking at it as a marketing spend. While charitable donations obviously are something that is more of a nice to do, it gives you that warm, fuzzy feeling and certainly can reflect your brand in a really positive light. Sponsorship really should be coming from a marketing budget and from a marketing standpoint. And I think what a nonprofit can do or what an arts organization can do is constantly show what the return on investment is, regardless of where the economic time are lying. So what are you offering as a property for that marketing investment? And so I know, for example, from TIFF, we in the time 2010, since I started, since 2010, we actually increased our sponsorship revenues 88% in total. So we're actually bringing in about 35% of the organization's total revenues now as a result of the fact that we are always year over year able to show just how much opportunity we have to engage with fabulous consumers, engage with industry tastemakers, and showcase your brand in absolutely the best light. So that's how I know we've been able to continue going on, even through tough economic times.
So now you have to explain how to do it. It sounds like a fairy tale. Okay. Everyone would expect that the sponsorship contribution goes up by, I don't know, even if it goes up by 10%, it's a good
result. I hoped it 18 times.
No, 88% is a really big increase, so.
Yes. Well, I think first things first, that we really segment our audiences. So that's one thing that we do really well at TIFF is that we always look at who are we offering in terms of a consumer engagement. So we have four sort of distinct groups that we work with or that we see coming as audiences for our potential sponsors. We have our red carpet consumer. Those are sort of the typically women who are doing a lot of sharing on social media. They're doing a lot of the household buying. So certain brands, we focus on that group. We have our corporate influencers. Those are people who are doing a lot of corporate hosting on site in the arts environment. They're giving their clients and VIP consumers a really fabulous once-in-a-lifetime experience. We also have our industry. For example, the once-in-a-lifetime experience. Okay, so imagine you've got the new Brad Pitt film. Well, everyone can go see the Brad Pitt film 4 months after it's premiered at TIFF, but only a very small group can go on that one night that it actually is premiering with him in the room doing a Q&A with a red carpet and then your entire group. So imagine if you're a corporate host and you're bringing in 20 of your top clients and you're putting them 20 feet away from Brad Pitt while he's talking about his new film. That's once in a lifetime. And so that's the kind of experience that we're creating for those corporate influencers. And so we're creating experiences like this over and over and over again, like I say, for these red carpet consumers, these corporate influencers, these sort of cultural aficionados, people who really want to have an incredible cultural experience as part of their film festival experience and want to feel like they're learning something as part of participating in the festival. And so we look at these groups and our industry insiders and we segment them out and we actually target target specific brands. When we're going out and doing sales for sponsorship, we actually target brands who would be interested in speaking to one of those four groups. So even though there will be sub-segments of people within those four groups, that way we can really show them how our target is their target, and we can find complementary goals for each other.
So how do you do it? How do you show it? Let's say that, okay, we have the red carpet consumers. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there are a certain amount of brand. How do you approach? What do you tell?
Well, we always put together a very creative and customized package for everybody that we ever go out and speak to. I think that's one thing that TIFF does. I'm saying it better than most people in the world. We've done pretty well for ourselves. I think that one thing we do really well is that we never, ever, ever go out to propose a sponsorship without doing a lot of research. We know we have category experts within our sales team that we know really the ins and outs of everything that's going on and hot topics within key sort of sponsored industries or industries that have great sponsors at hand. So what we're doing is we're really putting together customized packages specific to those sponsors. We're learning everything about their business. We're learning about what's important to them. We're making sure that what's important to them is also important to us. And we're creating integrated programming for them. So we're looking at both brand building as well as business building. Is one more important to them? Do they want both things? And then we'll actually create customized packages with a menu of options that will be specifically built just for that sponsor when we go out and meet them. And so we're not coming with a package that says gold, silver, bronze.
As usual.
You know, you can fit yourself in here, kind of. Hope you like these things. This is what we have to offer. We will show them something that's completely customized based on everything we know about their brand and then work with them on actually pulling out the things that don't work and adding in things that do work for a completely customized package every time. So we have about 75 sponsors, and every single one has a different type of package.
So we understand you are this pushing side, or you are the ones who generate ideas and,
yes,
and sell them to them. It's not so that you go to a market tech director and say, here is your audience, do what you want.
No, we're right in there with them. And I think that's why we do really well, is that we consider ourselves a partner of theirs. And we know our brand better than anyone else. We know our audience better than anyone else. So we're the best people to tell them how to speak to our audience, how to get our audience excited, because we're already doing that. So let's really showcase their brand in a really exciting way and get people who are already here at TIFF or at the film festival, and they're already having this heightened experience, and they're already in this really great mood and in this great place. Where else would you want to showcase your brand? Obviously, in the middle of that enthusiasm. And so we're really working with our sponsors to create fabulous experiences that really resonate with our audiences based on what we know about them.
Can you give me an example about the business creation point of view? Anything you have done to generate a new business for your sponsor together with the festival?
Right. So that's the whole sort of brand building, business building piece. So I'm trying to give an example specific that would be great. I think one that really did well is our Grolsch partnership. Grolsch beer is our official beer of the festival. And when they first came on board with TIFF, they were still sort of relatively new to the Canadian market. They hadn't done a lot of huge sponsorships with us. They're a European beer brand. And we'd had some European brands in the past, but typically people really know the Canadian and North American brands. And so what we did was we worked with them to create some amazing integrated programming on site, a lot of sampling, but of course not the typical sort of bad sampling at lineups, something really creative where they actually created an open house that was sort of like a beer garden, something totally new for Canadians.
Where was it?
It was right in the heart of our festival. So right in the heart of what we have, it's called Festival Street. So they actually created a beer garden, and they've been doing this now year over year, where they are both sponsoring some major programs, but also have sort of the brand side. So they've got their logo across everything, but they also have integrated interaction in a digital space, as well as through our digital platforms. They're on trailers in front of all of our festival film premieres. And then, of course, you have your on-site live interaction. So consumers are seeing them, they're touching them, they're feeling them, they're tasting them at every single corner of the festival. And as a result of that, their business has increased, I don't know if I could say the actual percentage,
80 times.
Can't say for sure, but it's something pretty impressive like that. So they've done extremely well, and now they are the number one European import brand in Canada since they've started sponsoring TIFF.
And how
How long it has been.
3 years. And that's one thing I'll add also, that if you're doing a, and this is for all those sponsors out there that are maybe listening to this, because I think that a lot of sponsors, they think they're going to come on board and in your first year, you're going to have these miraculous results. Sometimes that happens. I think sponsorship is a long game. Sponsorship is something that you want to really build as a partnership, a long-term partnership. The sponsors that we have that do the best and that resonate the best with our audiences, there are year over year over year sponsors who every year our audiences are then expecting them to be there. They're expecting them to create a cool experience for them. They're expecting them to have an interaction with them. And those are the ones that do the best. The ones that come in 1 year and then leave after the 1 year, they're a flash in the pan. We do absolutely best with all of our long-term sponsors, and actually most of our sponsors are multi-year sponsors. So that's something I highly encourage any arts organization to try and pursue and really to try and hammer home that message. And then as you get those year-over-year sponsors, track the difference between the people who are doing the flash in the pan 1 year versus those year-over-year sponsors, because I can almost guarantee that you can prove the difference if you have that year-over-year partnership.
Absolutely. I do agree, because it's a kind of long-term investment. The question is also that if you take the beer case, do you have any idea, or do you know how big part of the marketing budget goes to sponsorship of your festival, sponsorship in general, and the rest of marketing? How big share from money to
So I can't speak specifically to Grolsch, but I can speak to sort of our sponsors overall. Typically, we're looking at around 26% of their total marketing spend being put towards sponsorship. And that can be sponsorship of sports properties. It can be sponsorship of arts properties, of festival properties. But that's really what the rule of thumb is now. The Canadian marketing landscape, you know, we're really pushing to show that that is an appropriate amount to be investing. And the other thing that I always like to mention is if you're investing $1 in a sponsorship, you should be investing an equal dollar for the activation of that sponsorship, because sponsorship is really, it's a platter. It's an opportunity to showcase your brand in an environment at a property. But what you put on that platter is the meal. And so you really should always be spending $1 to every dollar that you actually are investing in the access of that partnership and the access for that sponsorship property for your actual activation.
So actually, it comes, if I count it together, it comes about to half of the budget?
I would know the 26% should be both the investment in the property as well as... as well as the actual activation of it. But that's the other mistake I think a lot of sponsors make, or a lot of arts properties make, is that they don't go out there explaining that up front. And so I am morally opposed to the idea of taking someone's logo and putting that up on a wall and saying that's a sponsorship. That does nothing in this day and age. In this day and age, everyone, I mean, we all know this, everyone has no attention span. They need to be interacting with a brand. They need to have something that's shareable, something that's exciting. And by taking someone's logo and calling that a sponsorship, you're doing absolutely nothing. Everyone is wasting their money if that's what they think they're doing with the sponsorship. So you really need to create something.
Here in Estonia, we are wasting money. Yes,
we almost. I think mostly wasting money type of sponsorship.
But we
that's
have.
Why
a
I don't want to call you out.
That's why it's called charity in Estonia, because it's just we send you a check. And the logo.
But so, the good point here is that it's not 26%, it's maybe 2.6%. So okay, it's not a total waste.
At least not total waste. But listen, if you're really wanting to have your sponsorship mean something, if you want your sponsorship to actually turn into sales, if you want to be able to track that return on investment in a real way, you need to put a little bit more manpower behind that. And certainly you need to create something that's integrated. And that's the other point I'd like to make, is that, again, I don't want your logo to put up on a wall if your logo and your brand makes no sense for my brand. The reason why we do so well with our sponsors, and actually I'll just give you a quick stat, 45% of our consumers in past consumer surveys have agreed that a sponsorship of TIFF actually would change their buying habits. So what brands they'd actually be purchasing. And the reason for that is because we're actually creating these amazing integrated programs. So we'll find sponsors with complementary goals, as I'd mentioned before, and we'll work with them on creating something that's enhancing the overall festival experience for our audiences. We're not plopping Grolsch down or L'Oréal Paris down in the middle of our festival street, our festival village, and sort of saying, okay, go to town, just promote your brand. They're coming on as a partner of ours, and they're actually creating these amazing, smart, smart, integrated programs that are enhancing the festival programming. They're enhancing the overall festival experience for our audiences. And that's why they do so well with our audiences. We have smart people coming to our festival. They know when they're being advertised to, and they also know when someone's coming on board and they're really supporting our cause and our mission and our messaging. And that's what our sponsors do.
Okay. I just wanted to add, I think this is absolutely awesome that you really can change the behavior of customers, because it's kind of easy to work on the brand level, the awareness level. Okay, you get it rather easy. But if you come to the very last step and the customer needs to choose, then it becomes much more difficult or challenging. My question is that, do you have any good case, for example, about probably at least one of your supporters is from car industry?
Yes, we do. We have an
official auto partner. Have you any experience about how a sponsorship should help people choosing cars?
Well, I mean, I think we all know, and we've all seen the millions of commercials, and especially, I don't know if you guys get this, I assume you see the Super Bowl over here, but the biggest Super Bowl commercials are always the car commercials that are happening, and they bring on the top celebrities, and they're paying them a fortune to have these celebrities in their cars. What we're doing is we're having all the celebrities get out of the official auto sponsors' vehicles day in, day out, every single night. All the biggest celebrities, they're being seen in their vehicles. And I'm telling you, because they're paying us for the sponsorship as opposed to directly to the celebrities, you know, they're getting incredible bang for their buck on that front, because of course they have a celebrity affiliation, and that tends to do really well in the automotive industry as well as in many industries. That's sort of that celebrity VIP piece is so important for so many brands, and it's a really nice way for them to have that that close tie to celebrities without actually going on board and actually sponsoring those celebrities individually. So they have that celebrity closeness, but they're also getting to sponsor a fabulous festival and a nonprofit. So there's just so many nice things about it that I think our audiences, they see that. They see the sexiness of the celebrity, but they also see that they're supporting arts and culture and something that they love so much, which is our festival.
Absolutely. I just listen to you and then think that's, if you have such kind of results, probably you should have a line of sponsors waiting and knocking on your door and wanting to become sponsors. And then you are telling that, okay, you have to wait for next 3 years until our car sponsorship place is available. Or how is it?
That's true.
Is it?
So you have a festival every month now?
Actually, TIFF Bell Lightbox, oh God, now we're going to go off into a totally different topic. I don't know if you know that TIFF is one of the few, if not the only, public film festival in the world that actually has a year-round 365-day cultural center that is in the heart of Toronto's entertainment district. And so we actually do festivals almost every single month. Look at your face. You weren't expecting
no,
that.
No, it sounds normal, actually. But probably you don't have this red carpet all the time.
No, exactly. And you know what? That's absolutely fair. And that is something that we certainly are aware of, that the jewel in our crown is the Toronto International Film Festival in September. But we're doing this incredible programming year round, typically more in a Canadian marketplace. But certainly now we're doing a lot more globally and getting a lot more global attention for what we're doing year round. And so now that's the new piece for us. We have all of those amazing sponsors who already know about TIFF Festival in September. But now we actually can go to all those other sponsors who have been knocking on our door, who are so excited about partnering with TIFF and saying, hey, you want to do something in November and December in the lead up to the holiday period? We have something for you. Your biggest sales period is in April and you're focusing on kids. Well, guess what? We have the largest children's film festival in North America that we'd be thrilled to involve you in. So it's beautiful for us because we aren't limited to just 10 days of the year. Now we have 365 days to have these amazing partnerships.
What is your budget?
Our overall operating?
Yes. Where you need your sponsors, what kind of amount they are giving to you?
You know what? And we have sponsors of every single size from... I'm thinking the smallest sponsor we had this year bought a couple tickets to the festival. They called us two or three days before the festival, and they were desperate to get involved, and we knew that they had the opportunity for growth in the future. So I think they bought some tickets from us for about $5,000. But then, of course, we have some of our major sponsors where you're looking at well into the seven figures.
I can't count
per year.
You can't count too much.
I'm not giving any specifics.
Back to school.
But give us any bad example, please. What I mean is that you said that who has been at least 2 or 3 years with you, there are mainly successful stories.
Mm-hmm.
But is there any
lesson who has been for 3 years and not successful?
Yes, yes, maybe not so successful. What they haven't done so successfully, or what you together haven't done, what could be a lesson for you?
Absolutely. And I think it's going back to what I said, which is sometimes we have those sponsors that they come on board, and we always go out encouraging them to really build out something exciting surrounding their sponsorship, to really activate online a lot, to do things digitally. The digital activation is so critical in this day and age, mm-hmm. especially for getting that additional ROI, getting the additional eyeballs on your property and the partnership. And we've had a few sponsors in the past who, unfortunately, whether they came on too late, they just didn't have the planning time, or, you know, they were hearing from above that they weren't supposed to be spending the money that they felt they needed to be investing. Unfortunately, sometimes, you know, within a hierarchy of a company, they can't always get exactly what they want. Hey, we all know that. And so I think there have been a few sponsors who, you know, wanted to do more and they couldn't do as much as they'd like to surrounding actually investing in the promotion of the partnership. And those people, of course, they don't get as great results as our other sponsors who do that one-to-one ratio.
So how early should be a company kind of knocking on your door in order to have enough space to prepare for taking maximum out from the festival?
We typically try and, we're already outselling sponsorships and creating partnerships 2 weeks after the festival every single year.
Okay.
So
1 year preparation.
1 year preparation mm-hmm. is ideal. I think the latest that we typically like to bring people on board is around May, which is about four months before the festival. And that gives an appropriate amount of time to do any long lead media, to buy any additional advertisements they wanted to do, but also to actually create a full campaign around the festival. And that's what we really encourage, is for the company's sort of fall campaign to be built into what we're doing with TIFF.
How much do you know about the campaigns, what they are going to create? I mean, that if you have 75 partners, everyone has a different campaign. Mm-hmm. Do you have an overview about what is it's going to be? Do you check somehow that they are not, how to say, not competing to each
Absolutely.
Other, not cannibalizing each other,
Absolutely.
Not trying to be in the same media?
Yeah, we work with them really closely on that, actually, and absolutely everything that they do that has the word TIFF in it or the logo TIFF on it, we have to take a look at it and approve it. So we're really keeping a close eye to ensure that everyone's getting a very special piece of the TIFF pie. So really, we try and segment off, as I say, that different target groups are being spoken to by different sponsors, and that's what we really work with our sponsors on, to ensure that what they're doing is really special and will really resonate with our audiences and with their target group specifically in the way that they want it to. And so we're working with them well in advance on creating all of that content. And on top of that, we actually host every single year a sponsor networking event that takes place in May, which is why you need to sign on by May. but we host this fabulous party and we invite all of our official partners to this party. And the goal of that is to actually have them network with each other and potentially create, you know, cross-promotional opportunities and work with complementing brands on leveraging each other and each other's marketing spend and really blow their sponsorships out of the water together.
In all that, where remains the film itself? How important is this film that people are going to see, and how important is all around those films?
Critical. Absolutely critical. I mean, I think that there's always a sort of natural tension between arts and corporate funding. And I think that arts especially, you don't see it as much in sports or in other areas where there's sponsorship, but certainly we need to maintain the artistic integrity of everything that we do. And so we're hyper aware of that. We're made hyper aware of that by our programming team, because of course they're also very protective of our brand and everything that we're doing, and they do such an incredible job on that. So we want to make sure that when we're working with our sponsors, that whatever they're doing is speaking to film. It's speaking to our mission, our vision to change the way people see the world through film. Certainly, if there's an element of celebrity culture in there, that fits well with everything that we're doing from a public film festival perspective. And really, that always will be the centerpiece of everything that they're doing and everything that they're communicating. Like I say, it doesn't make sense for them to come on board and just hand out a bunch of samples unless there's some messaging that attaches to what we're doing as well.
Do the sponsors have any chance to influence the film content? that we want to show this part and not that part.
No.
Not at all.
None. No.
So they take everything that, accept everything you have chosen and try to accommodate their actions.
That's
according
right.
to that.
And well, like I say, we specifically work with them to point out which films work well for them, which films, you know, we imagine their target audiences will be attending. So, for example, we're not going to put, you know, a really sexy fashion brand in front of a bunch of children's films because it doesn't make sense. Likewise, we wouldn't put an alcohol brand in front of children's films or any films that, let's say, would have a topic of alcoholism in it. We actually, as a sponsorship team, and I think this is something very unique as well that we do at TIFF, we always have one sponsorship representative attending many of our pre-screenings of our films to actually monitor the content of the film and then be able to say, is it an appropriate fit for a sponsor or is it not? And that way we really are able to tailor where our sponsors are going to be at any time.
Do the sponsors see the films before?
No.
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 So they just have to trust you.
They do.
You pick the films and they trust you completely.
We're great partners, so they trust us now.
Very good. I just want to ask that when the festival is over, you have done your budget, you have done excellent job, and then you probably have a review meeting. Mm-hmm. What went right, what went wrong?
Yep.
And usually what happens even in the greatest team, that you always see that your team is improving, doing things better and better and better, and then you always have some things that, oh my God,
again, that one thing
that we couldn't nail. Yeah. What are you worrying about? What are the things that you would like to nail, but still maybe it's not perfect?
Well, you know, I think, like I said, we do a good job. We have a huge team also. We're very lucky at TIFF. We have a really strong organization with a lot of incredible professionals. Our organization is very robust. So I feel like we always have a lot of support for our sponsors. But the one thing I always think to myself is, oh, we had more time. If only we had more hands on deck. And, you know, I always feel like we're pulled in a million directions during the festival and, of course, year round as well. And so that's one thing that we always, you know, hope to achieve is to be able to make every single one of our 75 sponsors feel like we have 100% of our time available to them.
Yeah. What do you do? What have you done until now in order that they feel that you are there any moment that they need you?
Yeah. So we have a very interesting model at TIFF, actually, because we sort of operate like a typical marketing agency and that every single sponsor doesn't have one person supporting them. They have two people supporting them. So there's one person who leads and one person who supports. And so every person on our team has a number of accounts that they lead and every person on our team has a number of accounts that they support. So at any one time, if your account lead isn't available and you're a sponsor and you're calling frantically, what's going on? I need to find you. If that person isn't available, there's another person they can call. And then on top of that, of course, they have the associate directors and our director that they can call as well to help give them that support. So I really do feel like with that model, we're able to give them a lot of attention. And we're also always aware of what's going on. There are no skeletons hidden in anyone's closet.
Absolutely. And you all together about 150 persons, more or less?
No, sorry, the sponsorship team is 13 people, and then we have TIFF last year during the festival time period, so that's the sort of 6 weeks before the festival, I think we were close to 800 employees, plus about 3,000 or just under 3,000 volunteers.
But the sponsorship team, does it stay the same during the year?
Yes.
Or is it increasing also for the
festival? We always have
the
same for the full year. Yeah. Okay. We bring on board a few assistants and interns to help us support with the administrative tasks, but it's primarily the same team throughout the year. And that also speaks to the fact that we are giving our sponsors year-round support. So even if they're only festival sponsors, i.e. they're not doing 365-day sponsorships, we're still in communication with them constantly throughout the year. We're helping them work through what their campaign is going to be. We're keeping them excited about us and about what we're doing. And they really feel like part of our community.
Very good. And now I come really to my very last question. And it's a different one. As I usually explain we talk about the Estonian food producers.
Yeah.
And it's a very specific reason as from August this year, there is import bans for Estonian food to Russian market. And this has affected the industry a lot. They tried to find new markets because Estonia is such a really tiny one and then most of them won't survive without exports. And that's why we have picked the food industry to give some advice from our different speakers. And the question for you is that if you would think about a food producer and think that how would a food producer get maximum out from sponsorship a film festival?
Mm-hmm. We've had food producers before, actually, with TIFF, and they've been very, very interesting partnerships. In some cases, you would never expect the people who were on board to be partners of ours, and they actually came on board and did really great, again, integrated programming that made sense for what we were doing on site. So we would have sampling opportunities, we would have branding opportunities, but I think in the case of exporting specifically, you're probably going to want to look at something more surrounding product placement, potentially also craft services opportunities. So when people are actually doing filming outside of Estonia, are you able to do some sort of contra deals that you're offering food to have your food products in the hands of the industry to be able to get your brand out there? And that's sort of more, again, of a brand building opportunity. Because, again, I think with a food production, it's very important that that's something that people can touch, taste, feel. And that would be sort of my recommendation. But again, it's tough when there are bans and depending obviously on the rules and regulations surrounding the other sort of countries that you'd be focusing on.
But you don't mean that it should be a product placement in a movie, but more about to
you can do both.
To help the crew to use the products to understand
that. I think you can do both. I think you can do both, absolutely, okay. Yeah. So it depends, obviously, on the budget of an organization,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
because
yeah,
product
yeah.
placement is very expensive. But that could be something interesting for an organization that wants more of a brand presence and wants to expose their brand to sort of the maximum audience. If the goal is to have people actually, like I say, touch and taste the food, you know, certainly that would be one way that you'd be able to actually do a contra deal that maybe wouldn't cost as much money as a product placement, that at least you're getting the actual food product out there and in the hands of tastemakers.
Very good. Thank you, Lotta. I think it's a great advice.
Turundusuudised. And now we're going to turn to Mintel.com. And this time it says that packaging is going to be changed. Everybody who is doing the package, they think it's time to revolutionize all this field. And the article is interesting. Of course, it's talking about this Pack Expo that is going on. But the most interesting thing, what is coming out of the idea, what the manufacturers of packaging are thinking, is that they don't want to see themselves anymore as a suppliers of some kind of package, but they want to provide service. They are service providers now. Would it be digital service or whatever, but they are service providers now and in future. So what are your ideas about it? Will it work? Is it okay? When we will see it?
That's a tough one, and I'll be honest, I am not an expert in packaging, nor in sort of this overall topic surrounding packagers as suppliers, you know, but certainly I think it's a really important topic, and one thing that we are always faced with at TIFF is, and I think this comes with, you know, an intelligent consumer, people are very focused on what's going on environmentally, people are very focused on, you know, climate change and what our carbon footprint is doing to the world. And I think that, you know, packaging is such an integral part of that, and the amount of waste that we're actually producing. So I think any way that modern packaging companies can speak to that and speak to their minimal impact or how they're trying to change the way that we actually have our impact on waste and on the environment, I think that would be, you know, certainly a focus topic for what I would pursue.
So you would need packaging help not to waste too much.
That would be, hey, and listen, I'm really speaking more as a consumer than an expert on this. I actually typically buy products, or I will, my choices of what products to buy would actually change if I saw that the packaging was eco-friendly. I see a lot in Toronto now, we have a lot of fast food companies that are using biodegradable packaging, and I think that's really a shift that we're seeing across the board. And so the more that packaging companies are able to showcase that and showcase that they are trying to make positive change, the intelligent consumer is going starting to recognize that and possibly be willing to even spend a little bit more for that because they also want to make their contribution. I know I do.
Anu, are you intelligent too?
You an intelligent consumer? I don't know. I'm saying a lot about myself.
No, that's, I totally agree with you. It just this news reminded me the marketing cinema. The last film we saw was The Naked Brand in our marketing cinema that we run here a couple of times per year. Mm-hmm. And it was really talking about the issues that you really have to kind of be very open to your customers, tell what your product is consisting of. And I think that as important as the product inside is the package outside as well. Mm-hmm. It's not that your product is really eco-friendly and the package is whatever and you don't care. So I think that a lot of innovation should come to the market from the packaging point of view. You could tell about how it's made, how to recycle, but also about the big question is that probably for the packaging industry is that how to make a package that could be let's say that could make you to choose one brand over another, not even looking at the brand so much, but really the package gives full advantage. And I think that as the competition between brands increases, so everyone tries to find new things. Coca-Cola has done a lot of things around the packaging and around the labeling and everything. So I think that all the other industries also, especially the mature industries, have to understand the packaging is very important as really part of the total mix.
And where packaging can also have a second life as opposed to what its originally intended life was, right? I'm just thinking off the top of one of our sponsors that we have, and I love this because they've actually shown that their packaging can be used for something completely different than what you'd expect it to be, and that's actually our beer sponsor, where they've, it's such a beautiful bottle that they have. It's sort of an iconic bottle that has a pop-top lid. So the lid is actually resealable, and you can use it obviously for endless amounts of things, including, for example, once we had a whole conversation about how they were, I can't remember if they were talking about some of their actual promotions or if it was just something that they saw was happening on social media. People kept going on social media talking about the uses of their bottles. So not even about their product, but how great the bottle is and how they're making, you know, after they've had their fabulous beer, they're making a vinaigrette for their salad in the bottle. They're using it as a gorgeous vase. Like the bottle became a topic. And I think that's so interesting. That in and of itself could be, like you say, the reason to purchase something is that it has this second life.
Turunduse täht.
You know what? Not any company, but what I've been reading a lot about, because of course I'm always very interested in what's happening in the entertainment industry and now the run-up to awards season. But I think that there are a lot of celebrities right now that are working hard to get their nominations for their films. I don't think a lot of people realize that part of what celebrity life is obviously it's a big part of what they do is promotion of their films, but also promotion of themselves as they're leading up to the award season. And there are so many amazing contenders this year. And I'm very interested because so many of them premiered their films at TIFF as they do every year. And that's the first time that we got to see them in these incredible roles. But I've seen some good hustle out there from a lot of celebrities recently and talking about what their film is all about, what they themselves as a brand are all about, and they're really selling themselves to the public as well as to the powers that be within these awards contention. So,
thank you, Anu.
It's difficult as not much interesting going on in Estonia as we are preparing for the elections. So everything you see is connected to elections. So it's kind of difficult to find some other things as the Christmas campaigns haven't really started. So what I was thinking, it's not a major thing, but what I would think that whom I would like to give my appreciation is actually what is BAFTA doing, the Black Knights Film Festival. Mm-hmm. And I really like when I first heard about the idea that they are taking the international producers to show them Estonia, to show the different parts what we have in our small country and to be considered at least spot for a movie or something. So I think that it's very important what they do. Probably important for if something happens, if really someone gets interested, some place will chosen, and really Estonia will be part of something really big and interesting. I think it's a great promotion for the country. It's great promotion for the concrete place. And I think also that it's very important for Estonian film industry that they can really learn. Mm-hmm. How the things are done, maybe cooperate, and it will really create additional value to the industry. So that's why it's not a big thing, but I think that in general, if something happens, then it will become something that will really get our, I don't know, 10 years award or something. Mm-hmm. So Raul, what have you noticed?
Mm-hmm. Yes, what I was, actually one thing I noticed was how to call it? It was a leaving party of our biggest CEO in Estonia, Estonian Energy Company. It's the biggest company, and the CEO has been almost 10 years there leading it. So some bad guys, let's call them bad guys. No, who didn't like anymore that he is a CEO? Of course, they changed him and put a new one in. But he had some couple of months still around, and what he's been using it is it has been a really great successful PR campaign for himself, going all over Estonia, showing all the places what he has been helping to build and all the new projects and giving interviews and films. So he's like a film star now, and it's nothing new, but it's still interesting because the most CEOs don't do it if they are, let's say, kicked off from a position. They don't start their personal positive campaign, but he started.
They start the personal negative campaign. Yeah,
something like that. But he's been doing it well, and I really noticed it. So this is my candidate for this time.
So, who will get the award?
Out of three,
we have the celebrities, who are working hard for the nominations. We have the Estonian biggest company. Is it the biggest company, Estonian Energy? Or one of the biggest?
I think
first
it is.
First is at the second place. Mm-hmm. So the farewell party, and then we have initiative from PÖFF to present Estonia as a great place for movie makers. So whom would you choose?
Without a doubt, actually, the amazing people at PÖFF. I actually went on that tour, and after you said it, I thought, oh, I want to change my answer. So I'm glad I get to vote. It was absolutely spectacular. That tour blew my mind. I had no idea what to expect, and I was lucky enough to be invited, seeing as I'm actually not obviously a film producer, but I know many film producers, and I know many people who are always location scouting, and I just couldn't believe what you have available here. I mean, some of the places we went, I thought to myself, this would take millions of dollars to build in Hollywood.
Absolutely.
It would take millions of dollars to build in Toronto. But it's here. It's here. There's nothing obstructing it. You don't need to do any changes to it. Some of these locations are essentially sets that have been pre-built for the absolutely perfect, scene from a fabulous vampire film. Or, I mean, we're looking at, genre type things mainly. But, oh, man, we were just blown away. And actually, I was taking a lot of pictures of the scenes as we were going around and posting them to social media. And within minutes, I was, getting 40, 50, 60 likes on all of the images of Estonia. So the people back home are just blown away by what you have to offer.
Very good. So, Raul.
I have to agree this time.
Really?
Whoa.
Yes.
You don't seem like the type to do that often.
But I will.
Very good. But both team, I don't know, have they received any award from us?
Not for this project.
Yeah, okay, yeah. So you are receiving your award during next days.
Turundusdoktor aitab.
Today's case study sounds like that. I own a photo studio in southern Estonia. We do all kind of photos, families, weddings, celebrations, also product photos for companies, photos for passports, and so on. I've been considering exporting my services abroad, but I have no idea about how to do it. I do have 3 employees, and we plan also to have a young graduate from a Danish creative school who could help us with languages and the main research. So how how should I start exporting, is the question.
Don't ask me this time.
It's a big question.
First time in the history of this show we are doing here.
You have no answer.
I thought, why they should export it? What are they going to export? Are they a photographing service or editing service? Or why should they do it if they put their transport prices there? Whoever travels,
exactly.
What is their benefit? So I don't suggest anything this time.
Jennifer, what do you think?
That's exactly my reaction, actually. When I heard it, I thought to myself, listen, you know, good on you for wanting to expand your business, and that sounds great, but, you know, what is your competitive advantage that makes you think that you should be exporting? Why would they use your services over a local service? What are you offering that really makes sense for you and that will justify the probably huge costs associated with exporting your services based on how this question was written up? So I think that's really important, that if you do find that competitive advantage, it's really narrowing your focus. It sounds like he's doing, like I say, he says all kinds of photos, families, weddings, celebrations, product
photos.
Nothing too narrow. Oh my God, you know, focus on one, be the expert in one. This, I feel like, is a bit of a jack of all trades situation,
yeah.
Potentially master of none. Be the master of one and then really represent yourself as that sort of master brand on that one thing. And then I think you'll probably have a better chance at being able to promote yourself internationally once you've shown what you can do on that front.
Very good. But my idea was, I'm maybe not so pessimistic. That's why I was thinking that southern Estonia, it doesn't sound bad because probably it's next to Latvia, our neighboring country. So it might be
north
that...
Northern Latvia.
Yeah, to northern
forest
Latvia.
Forest here, forest
yeah,
there.
Yeah, it depends where they are. And it might be that from southern Estonia to Latvia, it might be just a couple of kilometers or maybe 40, 30 kilometers. And maybe it's worth of investigating what do they have, because the northern Latvia is not very kind of, let's say, there are probably not too many photographers. And it might be that as they are not reading Estonian or they are not in our media room, probably they just don't know that there is maybe, I do hope that they have a professional studio. I don't know what type of studio they have, or maybe it's kind of the professional studio around some, I don't know how many kilometers. And it might be that for the northern Latvian part, it might be nearer to come to their studio instead of going to Riga. There are probably several of them, or a next biggest city in Latvia. So it might be that if you take it just not looking too far, looking around you, maybe the first idea is just to understand. Maybe it's kind of easy way to attract customers to your studio, what you already have. I don't believe that the purple person who comes from Denmark could help you with Latvian market. Maybe some Latvian guy would be better from the kind of location point of view. But I would suggest first think this, because it might be that there are really opportunities for the passport photos. You need them, but it's too expensive to travel to Riga to do the photos. So there might be some kind of opportunities for that as well. So this could be the first suggestion. With the Danish or the person from Denmark, I think it's always good when you have someone having the international kind of understanding and maybe can help you, how to say, with the brand building, as you told. Find your own handwriting. Maybe you do some kind of special photos with, I don't know, special layers or whatever you can do with a photo that is more than a photo, becomes more like an art. And then you can maybe do something else and find really channels. Maybe you cannot export the service, you can export the beautiful photos that you create afterwards. Maybe find different... the photo stock companies. Mm-hmm. There you can just present your artwork and get some money if it's used. So there are probably ways that could be.
One way is actually to build their studio on a truck and to travel around from village to village and try to sell their services. Yeah?
Like we have food buses and bank buses traveling around, so you can have a hairdresser and the photographer. Maybe to combine them too, can go to hairdresser and have a beautiful picture taken on you. So.
But I think at the heart of what you said is it's exactly, I think, what we agree on, is that there needs to be that sort of competitive advantage identified, because if there isn't one that they can find that really makes sense for them and their business model, then you know, it's nice, the idea of expanding is always a nice idea, but you also don't want to dive headfirst into something that doesn't actually make sense from a financial perspective,
yeah,
or
absolutely.
Return perspective.
Absolutely. And of course, with that case, the Northern Latvia is not the very rich part of the country, so it might be that they are willing to pay much less for your services. Yeah. But if there is no other chance, then maybe even it's better than nothing. Thank you a lot. Thank you a lot for being here. Thank you a lot for sharing the experience and the good ideas for our cases. And dear listeners, please listen us again in a week's time. Meanwhile, please send us the cases. You know that we really love to solve it and find different ways how you can grow with your business. Thank you.
Sulle meeldis Turundusraadio. Telli endale meeldetuletus järgmiste saadete kohta Marketingi Instituudi kodulehelt.